This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with the generous Professor H.J. McIntyre, International Relations, to Delhi, but not only Delhi, to Brasilia, to Johannesburg, to all the states of sub-Saharan Africa and North Africa, not participating in the sanctions against Russia, not committing themselves to NATO or to the Russian Federation or to China. South America numbers similar states, Central America, as well as Southeast Asia. Professor, the sense is the world is watching, and the contest between NATO and Russia, NATO and Russia and China, is a test about the future, the leadership, the international order. How do you measure it looks to that point of view now?
Well, I would change slightly the way you phrased the question, because I think that Russia is really the great power here, and that we have made it very clear to the Chinese that if they actually start sending weapons to China, that then we're going to sanction them. And sanctions would absolutely destroy their economy. Our sanctions on microchips and microchip production technology and so forth, which the Koreans and the Japanese, who are the other powers in microchip stuff, have joined in on, this has done extraordinary damage already, and the Chinese are just basically begging for mercy. So I don't think there's a lot of talk about a Chinese-American contest, but there isn't really a Chinese-American contest, because before the heavyweight match at the weigh-in, the Americans came in and we weighed full, and China is actually not in that weight class. But the thing is, they are very good at fostering dreams, expectations, and they have enough power that they can cause trouble for neighboring countries, such as Vietnam. But remember, in Vietnam, the Vietnamese roundly defeated the Red Army in 1979, and that war continued for a few years after that. And I know people who were in it, and the Vietnamese slaughtered the Chinese. One of my friends was a frontline nurse, and she said at the end, and she was a volunteer from China, and she said at the end of each day, I was soaked in blood from my hair down to my feet, and there wasn't a single living Chinese soldier in her little nurse's station, and that the Vietnamese were the cruelest, the most relentless, the most tenacious, the most inventive, the bravest, in every superlative in warfare. And the Chinese just bled terribly. And what people say is that if you compare Chinese performance to Russian performance in their various joint operations, joint drills they've been having, the Russians are not by any means at the top, but the Chinese are palpably much worse at everything militarily than the Russians are. Now let's just talk about India, because we have to understand something. First of all, India is really the vital power in Eurasia, because she's sort of a third of the way across. She is the southern cape of India is at a vital transit point. The Andaman Islands and so forth are critical for access to the Strait of Malacca. And India is a politically stable country. Now, people say, well, it's not a completely clean democracy, but I'm not sure that Washington, D.C. is a completely clean democracy. But she has been through such events as the assassination of her prime minister without missing a beat. She has been steadily developing her military capacity, and the Indians have much better judgment. First, they want to develop indigenous capacity, and second, they know they have to take it a step at a time. So the aircraft carrier they have just built is nowhere near as fancy as the one the Chinese have built, called the Shandong, But theirs works, and it has planes that can fly off it, whereas the Shandong apparently is made of steel, Chinese-made steel, that's not sufficiently strong to prevent holes, great holes forming in the side of it. And it's also incapable of generating enough electricity to operate the super fancy electric catapults, which they, I think the Ford may have those. Most of our CAVs, most of our carriers have a simpler launching method. The Indians have learned to do simpler things well, and they're now moving forward. But they are a huge problem for China, because China permanently alienated India with her invasion in 1962. The Indians never forgot it. And in 1998, the Indians tested an H-bomb, which they had developed themselves. No country has been more self-sufficient than India in developing nuclear power. She also has ICBMs. She also has an incredibly powerful cruise missile. And I've visited several times. When I first visited under the old administration, the naval ministry in New Delhi, there were sort of pigeons living there and all the rest, and I thought, well, it was terrible. Since then I've been back. I mean, the handle on the big front door is polished bright as can be, and there are no birds and no bird droppings. Now, this doesn't mean that the Indians have got a top-rate navy, but I am in contact with various Indian intel officers. And let me tell you, they're very good, and they have their own satellites. They are very good at overhead images, and China has no way of applying pressure to them. India has more arable land than China. India exports food, whereas China desperately imports food. And the only thing they could possibly do is to fight in the Himalaya area. And this is a problem for China, because this is the west end of China. And if they get in a war, it's going to be the east end. And, of course, the Indians will then. The thing to remember is this, that basically India is on the side of the west. That is what the coming to power of the BJP means. Now, Mr. Modi has got his views about Hinduism and everything, which are potentially very, very divisive in India. But he has been invited to come to the United States in June, and I suspect he will come. And when we look at things like their patterns of military buying, it's clearly the case that they are trying to shift away from their previous dependency on Russia to sort of NATO standardization. But why don't they come out and say, oh, you Russians are terrible meanies and war criminals? Well, it's a very simple reason. The worst thing that could happen to India would be for Russia and China to ally. And this would place India in a very, very difficult strategic situation. So the Indians have to do as much as they can to keep the Russians happy. And if refusing to invite Mr. Zelensky to the G20 meeting in September is going to make the Russians happy, that's worth doing. And many people in America don't seem to have looked at a map and understood the strategic dilemmas that the configuration of Eurasia places on India's plate. So I expect that existing cooperation with India is going to increase greatly, but we must not be surprised if they put a lot of effort into keeping the Russians sort of anesthetized by buying stuff from them. This BrahMos missile is, of course, a Russian-Indian joint production, but the Indians are now developing their own. They're very good scientists. They're developing good technology, but they don't have the kind of impatient ambition that the Chinese have. They say, well, we'll just go at this, and at a certain point, we'll do it right. So I suspect that the Shandong aircraft carrier will be at the junkyard Whereas the, I think it's called the Vikrant. There are a number of Indian aircraft carriers. Whatever this new aircraft carrier is, it's going to serve for a long time. So I don't think that the Indians are really waiting. I think they've chosen sides and they've decided we want to get with the West. They have tried the Russian way and it hasn't worked. And they have absolutely no use for the Chinese. However, the Chinese contempt for the Indians is just unbelievable, and it's led them into a series of terrible mistakes. As for the other countries, I don't know why South Africa is in the position, you know, of drilling with the Russians and so forth. But South Africa is a mess. I mean, look at the trouble their president is in. They've really got problems. Mr. Lula is coming from Brazil. Again, Brazil is not a powerful place. And the idea that the Chinese are somehow going to magically save Brazilian society and economy is just it's a fantasy that we Americans have had. It's an easy fantasy to have. Mr. Lula is a convicted criminal. I mean, he's a terrible man. He's now going to the Chinese. And if the Chinese have one thing that we can count on them for, is that they will lend money or they will make promises, but they won't actually deliver what they say. We have this Belt and Road project, which is basically a Chinese attempt to take over lines of communication in the world. And they built a huge dam in Ecuador near Quito. The cost of God knows how much, all built by Chinese, and of course the Ecuadorians have borrowed the money to pay for it. Now it turns out the dam is fragmenting and it's leaking and it's just worthless. And you mentioned Africa. The tension between the Africans and the Chinese who are moving there is such that it leads to murders, regular murders. The same is true in China's closest allied country, Pakistan. There are regular murders of Chinese in Pakistan because the Pakistanis don't like them and don't think they're up to any good. So I think that we have to pay attention to how countries align. But what is dramatic to me is to see the UN votes on the invasion of Ukraine. And Russia really has very few friends when it comes to these votes.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. Six capitals, the sixth capital being a stand-in for all the capitals who have not in any fashion participated in the sanctions and haven't at this point indicated that they stand with Russia and China or with NATO. There is the UN vote, and the professor says correctly, the overwhelming number was against the Russian conduct. This is the Friends of History Debating Society thanking Professor Mackinder. I'm John Batchelor.